Welcome, everybody. I'm Claire Ponton, the Mayor of Mid-Coast. Members of the public are able to attend the meeting in person or view the meeting live through a web link on Council's website. The meeting is being recorded and a copy of this recording will be placed on Council's website as soon as practical after the meeting. The meeting must not be recorded, distributed or circulated by others without the prior written consent of the Council in accordance with the Council's Code of Meeting Practice. Ask everybody to please stand. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Katang-speaking people, and pay my respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who now reside in the Mid-Coast Council area. I extend my respect to all elders, past, present, and to all future cultural knowledge holders. Thank you. If councillors could remain standing. We, the councillors of Mid-Coast Council, will undertake the duties of the Office of Councillor in the best interests of the Mid-Coast community and will faithfully and impartially carry out the functions, powers, authorities and discretions vested in us under the Local Government Act 1993 to the best of our abilities and judgment. The first item on the agenda is to consider NBN News's presence. So I will move that NBN News be granted permission to record visual at today's proceedings. Could I have a seconder, please? Thank you, Councillor Howard. All in favour? Thank you. That is everybody. Motion carried. Now, today we have, because our financial statements are in the agenda, we have a special activity. And I'd like to introduce Aubrey Perez, who's coming in via Zoom. Aubrey's from the New South Wales Audit Office, and is presenting to Council regarding item 18.8, the financial statements and auditor's report for 2023-2024. Welcome, Aubrey. Can I hand over to you, please?
Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me just share my screen so I can share my presentation. Oops. Sorry, can you just bear with me? Sorry.
Yep, no, that's all right.
I'll just share my entire screen. Can you please let me know if you can see it?
Yep, it's there.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you again, everyone, for the invitation and opportunity to talk to you about this year's financial statement audit of Mid-Coast Council for the year ended 30 June 2024. Just as a background, this year we are celebrating our 200 years in the audit office and has been conducting audits on behalf of the Auditor General. So the Auditor General for New South Wales helps the New South Wales Parliament hold government accountable for its use of public resources. So the audit office is mainly responsible for financial statement audits of New South Wales state government entities, local councils and universities. So we gained the mandate to audit local government in 2016. In addition, we also conduct performance audits and is accountable to and regularly reports to Parliament on audits conducted. I will now turn on to our report on the conduct of the audit. We have completed our audit of the general purpose financial statements and special purpose financial statements for declared business activities and permissible income. I am pleased to report that we issued an unqualified audit opinion, a clean opinion on 22 October 2024, which is earlier than the statutory deadline. The unqualified opinion for general purpose financial statements means the financial statements are fairly presented, and the unqualified opinions with emphasis of the matter for the special purpose financial statement means the financial statements are fairly presented, but we draw attention to its unique purpose and specific presentation requirements of the financial statement. I'm looking into the Mid-Coast Council income statement. You can see that the rates and annual charges revenue from 175.1 million increased by 6.3 million or 3.7%. This is mainly due to rate peg increase to 3.9%. The grants and contributions revenue of 134.7 million increased by 6.6 million or 5.2%. compared to prior year, mainly because of the non-cash contributions, but offset by a reduction in developer contributions. And the financial assistance grants was received in advance at 85% this year compared to prior year, which is 100%. The council's operating result from continuing operations is 72.4 million, and this is 36.4 million higher than prior year, mainly due to the increase in interest and investment income, rates and annual charges. And in prior year, there was a 22 million revaluation decrement for bridges recognized in the income statement, but it is nil in the current year. The net operating result before capital grants and contributions is 13.4 million. This improved by 32 million compared to prior year due to the similar reasons I already mentioned. In terms of cash and investments, it increased from 330 million to 372 million. So the cash and investment levels have a positive impact on the unrestricted current ratio, debt service cover ratio, and cash expense ratio, which all exceeded the benchmark set by the Office of Local Government, and which I will show in the next slide. This year, the council have 260.7 million externally restricted, which mainly consists of developer contributions, water and sewer funds. So the externally restricted cash has remained steady compared to the prior year. The internal allocations are determined by the council policies or decisions which are subject to change. The increase of 11.8 million is mainly due to additional funds set aside for plant and vehicle replacement and financial assistance grants received in advance. This next slide is from note G5.1 of the council's general purpose financial statement. This contains the six key performance ratios required by the Office of Local Government. So council has met five out of the six financial ratios in financial year 2024. The ratio which did not meet the Office of Local Government benchmark remained consistent from the prior year, being the rates and annual charges outstanding percentage. This ratio assesses the impact of uncollected rates and annual charges on council's liquidity and adequacy of debt recovery efforts. So the council's ratio of 10.7% is slightly above the benchmark of 10%. In terms of infrastructure, property, plant, and equipment, for fiscal year 2024, there was no comprehensive revaluations conducted. So the management reviewed the fair value of assets through indexation. As noted in the slide, council renewed 93 million of infrastructure, property, plant, and equipment in 2024 financial year. This was mainly spent on roads, bridges. A further 63.4 million was spent on new assets, including capital works in progress, mainly on water supply network, roads, and sewerage network. I will now turn on our annual work program. So this will just include the planned areas of focus for our audits in the local government sector, which are on financial reporting and performance, internal controls and governance, and areas of interest that are in focus during the conduct of our audits. During the year, we also investigate options to analyze financial sustainability as part of the audit program. And as mentioned, we have a different branch, the performance audit branch, who perform the performance audit for local councils. So the next slide shows the planned performance audit reports. For 2024-2025, we have coastal management reforms, which are looking at the coastal management planning and delivering coastal management reform. Mid-Coast Council was not selected for this audit, and this audit is currently in progress. For the long-term financial planning, this is still in scoping stage, and the rest of the other topics the council selected for this audit will still be decided in the future. So I'm just showing you the future planned audit work. Every year, we table a local government sector report to Parliament, and the topics are normally the audit result, which will consist of the opinions that we issued and how the timeliness and the quality of financial reporting. It will cover financial controls and the thematic themes from the management letter points, asset management. It also covers IT and cyber controls, governance on fraud control, which will look into the training or annual code of conduct and fraud assessment. Also, it will include management or managing conflicts of interest, the business continuity plan and crisis management and internal audit. Happy to take any questions, but in conclusion, I would like to thank the management, Adrian, Steve, Phil, David, and the rest of the finance team and other divisions who were involved in the audit. We are really grateful for the professionalism and the cooperation that was provided to our team to conduct our audit. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I will check with councillors to see if there are any questions. Yes, Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor, and thanks, Ms. Perez, for your presentation and also your presentation at the workshop this morning for councillors. You've been auditing or part of the audit team of Mid-Coast Council for some years now, and you've seen the journey that Mid-Coast Council have been on. We talk about the improvement journey we've been on, but you're independent of council from the New South Wales Audit Office. Could you speak briefly about the journey as you've seen it from where council was a few years ago to where we are now and where we might be heading into the future?
Thank you, Councillor. So I've been in the audit prior, I think, 2021. And then prior to 2022, the council has been always, you know, have extensions in terms of submitting and completing the financial statement. But since 2022, it improved. We met the statutory deadline. And this year as well, you know, we met it earlier than the 31st October deadline. So, that's a testament, I guess, for the management that you know they've been working hard, you know, to improve and the collaborative approach that we had between the audit office as well. You will also note the corrections in the financial statement have reduced and the management letter points.
Yes, thank you. Any further questions from councillors? No, it looks not. So thank you very much for your presentation today. We look forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank Cheers. You so much. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye. Okay, so moving to the next item on the agenda, which is apologies. So I'm going to move that leave of absence sought by Councillor McKenzie be accepted and that leave be granted. I have a signature. That was Councillor Tickle. Thank you. All in favour? That is everybody carried. We also need to confirm the minutes of the last meeting, so I'll move that the minutes of the 30 October 2024 ordinary meeting, copies of which were distributed to councillors, be taken as read and confirmed as a true record of proceedings. Seconder, please. Thank you, Councillor Wilson. All in favour? Thank you. It's everybody. It's carried. Now, this morning we had an open forum. There was one speaker at today's open forum. Mark Harris addressed council regarding genetic contamination in COVID-19 vaccinations. We had a public forum and there were six speakers at the forum. Kylie Powers spoke on behalf of the Heart Centre Taree in support of item 17.4 minutes of the local traffic committee. John Kennedy spoke against item 16.2, Shop Top Housing, Wharf Street, Tuncurry. Rhonda Crompton spoke against item 16.2, Shop Top Housing at Wharf Street, Tuncurry. Simon Carroll spoke in support of item 16.2, Shop Top Housing, Wharf Street, Tuncurry. Jason Bailey spoke against item 16.3, multi-dwelling housing in Bunyan Avenue, Old Bar. And Tom Cooper spoke on behalf of Beam Mobility in support of item 17.3, Foster and Tuncurry Hire e-scooter trial. I need to call for councillors and senior staff to declare any potential conflicts of interest for the meeting today. No one else? I've got one. Okay. I need to declare a pecuniary interest for item 18.5, which is the proposed acquisition of land for public use for the Blackhead footpath. And the reason is that my husband works for Zenith Surveyors, who are mentioned in the report and who are also providing surveying services. So I will leave the room at that stage for that item and hand over to the Deputy Mayor.
I also have a matter for 16.13, a non-pecuniary issue of non-significant nature.
Thank you. Thank you.
Likewise, madam.
Yep. You need to state the level of conflict and the
in
reason.
In regard to 16.13,
yep.
I have a non-pecuniary interest.
Yes. Less than significant? Or significant?
On the form that I filled out, Mayor, there was number four did not include either in any type of interest.
Number four.
It included leaving the room, which is what
it says doing. Non-pecuniary, take no part in the consideration of voting and be out of sight of the meeting.
Is the one indeed.
That is the one?
Okay.
So that is non-pecuniary. I don't know. I'm not going to guess. Anyway, you're leaving the room. Thank you for that. Please fill out the forms to make sure that there's a record given to staff. Were there any others? No. Okey-doke. Thank you for that. Where are we at? Notice of motions. All right. Moving on to item 12.1. Councillor... 12.1 is Councillor Peter Howard has given notice of his intention to move a motion as detailed below, and I'm going to ask you to move your motion, please, Councillor Howard.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Ponton. The matter of on-water boating compliance is a regular bugbear for many residents of the Great Lakes that seems to raise its head often on social media every summer.
Can I just briefly interrupt for process? If you put your motion... Then I can get a seconder, and then I'll ask you to speak to it.
Right, let me just find it. I'm sorry. Sorry, I've just got it here. Yes, okay. So I read the background or just the notice of motion?
No, the motion. Put notice the motion.
My notice of motion is that the Mayor Right to Transport for New South Wales seeking additional on-water boating compliance patrol measures in the Great Lakes region this summer season.
Thank you. And then I call for a seconder, who is Councillor Tickle. Thank you, and now I can invite you to speak to it.
Thank you. The matter of on-water boating compliance is a regular bugbear for many residents of the Great Lakes that seems to raise its head, often on social media, every summer, and frankly, with good reason. Whilst the vast majority of boaters and jet ski owners respect the rules, unfortunately, the evidence is that there are a certain cohort of boat and particularly jet ski owners that blatantly flaunt maritime rules and at times create dangerous situations for fellow waterway users that simply shouldn't be tolerated. There has also been considerable concern about boat and jet ski owners getting too close to local wildlife, particularly the substantial dolphin population that resides in the area. Boat and ski operators not respecting speed-restricted no-wash zones, such as in the channels of Foster Keys, can also lead to increased erosion of the channel banks. I would state that in no way should this be taken as an anti-boat or anti-jet ski motion. As a former jet ski owner, I know how much good, clean fun they can be, and people should continue to be allowed to use them on our local waters. However, all owners and operators need to be compliant and respect other water users. The community has made their views on poor on-water boating behaviour very clear. And as such, I feel it's time for Council to write to the Maritime Authority to request some extra policing, hence the notice of motion.
Thank you. Seconder, would you like to speak to it?
No, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Anyone wish to speak? Council Smith.
I'd just like to speak in favour of the motion, but also to say that... the jet skis in Foster at Christmas time and the holidays afterwards are really often imparting danger and disturbing people that live there, just in their houses, but also on the Tuncurry Rock Beach as they whoosh by. For the marine people to be able to stop this is a very financial matter, and they're going to need a lot of rangers because some of them are very based out further from the headlands. And I think that the letter that goes ahead should really take out the idea that when places like ours, which have so many tourism water industries and water applications right up and down the coast, are asking for help, or they should also be funded and supported by state. And obviously the dolphins and other animals, not only are they getting in the way with by being hit or, you know, bothered in their flights, but they also, the sound is often very bad. Okay, that's it.
Thank you. Do we have any councillors wish to speak against the motion? No? Councillor O'Keefe, you'd like to speak for?
Oh, yes. I'd like to thank Councillor Howe for bringing this motion, and that would hopefully set a precedent for reminding the state government and its various departments of its responsibilities. There are areas down near Tea Gardens, specifically Jimmy's Beach, where a similar lack of patrol has led a flagrant flouting of the rules, and it severely impacts both holidaymakers and residents. So I strongly support this one.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No? I'll put the motion. All in favour?
Oh, sorry.
Did someone else want to speak?
I did.
You need to catch me before I put the motion. Use your voice if I miss you.
I will. Thank you. Look, as if it were me, get rid of them forever. They drive me mad. As a libertarian, of course, they should be able to use them anywhere. As a councillor, I completely support Councillor Howard and Councillor Smith in regard to any possible harm that may happen to the animals in the waterways of our lovely LGA. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No. Okay, I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. It's carried. Thank you. Moving to the second notice of motion. This is Councillor Alan Tipple. Could I ask you to put your motion, Councillor?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I will read this motion out in full because there's a variation to what was published in the notice publicly. The motion is that Council establishes a policy position where the funding allocated to the annual operational plan for the Transport and Infrastructure Directorate shall be an increase on the previous year's amount that as a minimum is commensurate with the increase in federal assistance grants, inclusive of the roads component, and that those funds be prioritised for asset renewals and maintenance. Point two, ensure funding allocation from general rates to the Transport and Infrastructure Directorate shall as a minimum be increased annually commensurate with any increase in rates revenue. Point three, prioritise capital works, for example, road or bridge reconstruction, be generally funded from TIDE grants. Point four, the position outlined in points 1 to 3 be considered in the annual budget development process. Point five, as part of the road strategy, a report be provided with annual status updates, identifying the overall road inventory in the different condition levels, projecting current intervention timelines and the likely escalation of costs for implementing optimal renewal strategies, such as the resealing, heavy patching and rehabilitation programs. Point six, provide status reports no less than annually, reflecting the impact to the long-term financial plan of any escalation of renewal backlog after factoring in indexation. And finally, point seven, implement community engagement to improve the community's understanding of the road strategy, which prioritises maintenance and renewals with reconstruction generally funded by TIDE grants.
Thank you. So that's actually quite different to what was here, but I think you've changed item one. You inserted some extra ones. Can we pull it up on the screen, please, for everybody to have a look at? And I think you made changes at the end there too. Have a quick look at it. We're happy with that. Yeah, there was one inserted in the middle. There was a change at the end and the first one. So can I have a seconder for that? Thank you, Councillor Miller.
Yes, thank you, Councillor Miller. I'd also point out that there was a typographical error in the background notes as published, and I did thought I had put that through in time before notice. But anyway, it should read, in terms of renewing transport assets, it costs approximately 10 times more to reconstruct a road compared to the cost of the reseal. I note that the note takers have picked it up. In the last term of council, there was a lot of work done which included a number of strategic plans being adopted. Two of the most significant strategic plans when it comes to financial sustainability were the road strategy and the long-term financial plan. However, those documents in themselves did not provide a solution. They merely spelled out the problem this council has, and that is the correlation between a worsening backlog and infrastructure renewals or maintenance, and where underfunding leaves council in a perilous position in terms of sustainability. At a recent Rhodes Congress in relation to sustainability, it was found that unless there is a clear policy established by the elected bodies whereby funding for maintenance and renewals increases in line with rate peg or any other untied revenue increases, such as federal assistance grants, council who are currently sustainable will not remain that way. Indexation factors need also to be considered, as well as increased costs of construction when considering funding needs. In Midco's case, do not confuse the recent press that lauded council's financial reporting, and it was in fact be reflected in today's agenda item 18.8. Meeting accounting standards is important and a great outcome, but it does not reflect a soundness in financial sustainability. The long-term financial plan spells it out, and expecting cost-cutting to be the magic wand to make us financially sustainable and being able to fund the very issues called out in the road strategy is fanciful. I described the cost-cutting the other day as dusting off the table after the family have eaten and gathering any scraps, then hoping to feed the family the next week when a full shopping trolley is what was needed. I must stress that this motion is not the mechanism that determines council's resolve whether or not to pass on a rate peg increase, but it does spell out the expectation that if this were to occur, then any revenue gains will be commensurate in how it is appropriated to the Transport Directorate. The General Manager, in his comments to the notice of motion, pointed out that there is a budget process established as a policy, and this has been addressed in dot point four. This motion, if supported, is not a fix to sustainability, but it does send a clear message that at the very least, the elected body will not accept any short changing to the Transport Directorate in that budget process. Last budget period saw a rate peg of 5.2%, yet the allocation to roads maintenance was an increase of around 4.67% for the year. The difference between 5.2 and 4.67% when considering the approximate $24 million spent on roads from rate revenue might not seem much, but it does translate to around 100 metres of heavy patching foregone, which is unacceptable. The same concept applies to the first dot point and how any increase in federal assistance grants is to be appropriated to the Transport Directorate. The intent is where the allocation of FAGs to roads is less than the total increase in FAGs received by Council, then the budget appropriation to the Transport Directorate by Council will be commensurate with the overall increase. Dot point three has some flexibility, as the wording deliberately says generally, which enables exceptions to be dealt with based on the circumstances. This could be, for example, urgent bridge replacement to manage the risk of potential community isolation, but the intent is clear. The remaining dot points reflects the elected body's role in oversight and the need to consider what levers might need to be pulled to intervene as necessary. And finally, it is crucial that the communication strategy make it quite clear and help the understanding of the community how important the road strategy is and how this will impact on them long term. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Do you wish to speak to it, Councillor Miller?
Thank you, Mayor. And I thank Councillor Tickle for bringing this motion, and I commend Councillor Tickle for the work that he does at the Roads Directorate and in other places on a state level as well in terms of his work and his knowledge of roads and what's going on across the industry. You need to look at this motion in the context of what we've been doing for the past 3 years, the Financial Sustainability Project, the Business Transformation Program, the Roads Strategy. We've spent the last few years saying enough is enough, saying we can't ignore this issue anymore. We can't keep being reactive. We need to take a strategic approach to fixing the decades of underinvestment in our roads, and that's what we've been doing. So this motion from Councillor Tickle is another piece in the puzzle. It's an important piece in that puzzle. It protects the allocation of funding to roads, and it ensures that that funding to roads goes up as any income goes up. Council does still need to find more money beyond that to go into our roads. There is still work to do beyond that. But this motion sets the floor and makes sure we don't go backwards, and that's what's important. We still have work to do on a clear action plan for roads over the next 4 years and how we're going to turn the road strategy into action, and that's work that's ahead of us, and we'll do that. But this motion is a very sensible next step in the strategy.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Smith.
Thank you. Having attended the roads conference, strategy conference with Councillor Tickle last year and the recent local government conference in Tamworth, it really becomes obvious that as regional councils, some of us have been left in the back seat. To go to a place like Sydney and take the buses and trains and look at how much money is being spent really does refresh that idea that I received when I came to this country, that New South Wales stands for Newcastle, Sydney, Wollongong. You know, we're getting more and more people moving here with their vehicles, with little to no ways of getting around in bicycles or electric bikes or buses constantly. And they're using their cars where the prices are going up. And this is, something that they're not used to. There's places with good roads. And this hasn't been one of them, thanks to a lot of the things that were done to us by the federal and state government and amalgamating us, et cetera. So when new people come here, they say, it's your roads, it's your roads. Guess what? It is. But we actually have 30% of our area, which is water, beaches, parks, and national parks and state forests. Logging occurs, trucks are here, and the money that we've received is just a pittance. And, you know, we might be saying goodbye to the former federal member. I hope that when we say hello to a new one, they take this seriously.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Beasley.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Tickle very prominently stated in his pre-election statement that roads were a priority, and I happen to have it here. This was left, and I think the mayor might remember this. This was left in a garden bed out front of Foster Library, and I happened to pick it up just cleaning up. It's very instructive because it has some ticks against certain candidates and some crosses against others.
We'll Councillor, I hope you're keeping to the topic of the nomination today, please.
I am indeed. So Councillor Tickle said roads maintenance has been underfunded for decades, which is a problem for most regional councils. The road strategy adopted last term of council and a pilot program which involves use of artificial intelligence run through the New South Wales Roads and Transport Directorate. I think Councillor Tickle today in bringing this motion to council is furthering the statement that he made pre-election. Very glad to see it. Us Libertarians are very glad to see it, and we fully support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further speakers? Councillor O'Keefe.
I'd like to echo the thanks to Councillor Tickle for bringing this motion. Short and sweet, roads, roads, roads. The message loud and clear from the people who put me here in this room was they want their roads attended to. I'm here to reinforce that message as many times as possible, and I once again thank Councillor Tickle for bringing this motion, first of many, I'm sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Graham.
Yeah, thank you. And yes, the roads are the number one issue in this LGA, and that's why most of newbies have been elected to try and address that issue. I thank Councillor Tickle for his motion. It's a step in the right direction, and it's a small step, but it, nevertheless, it's a good one, and we will endeavour to provide and find whatever funding we can to fix the roads problem. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further speakers? No, I shall put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. That is everybody. Motion's carried. Next item on the agenda is the questions with notice, and Councillor Smith submitted two questions with notice relating to the first was progress and achievements in implementing the biodiversity framework, and the second one was Council's response to tree poisoning at Diamond Beach and Foster. These questions have been answered in the business paper, and I commend them to you. There's some interesting information there. Now I need to go to the business papers for the day. And I will remind myself, and please remind me if I move too quickly, but after each vote is taken, the minute taker will attempt to share the results on screen before I move on. And that's so that you can confirm that what we've recorded is correct. All right, so that gets us to item 14. No, it's, what is it? It's 15.1, not 14. 15.1. This report provides a list of matters outstanding from notices of motion and other resolutions of council since 1 January 2018. I have a mover, please. Councillor Tickle.
Thank you, Mayor. I move that the information in Attachment 1 Resolution Register 27th of November 2024 be noted.
Thank you. Seconder? Councillor Wilson. Does anyone wish to speak to it or have any questions? No? Okie doke. I'll put the motion. All in favour? Report is duly noted. Thank you. 16.1 is sewerage reticulation main at Tea Gardens. Development application, DA 2024/0054, seeks consent for a sewerage reticulation main to be constructed within the Tea Gardens area. The development is being proposed on behalf of the council and is required to be reported to council for determination in accordance with the determination of application and approvals policy. I have a mover, please. Thank you, Councillor O'Keefe.
All right. Yes, I move that the development application DA 2024/0054 for the construction of a sewage reticulation main in Tea Gardens be approved, subject to the conditions contained in Attachment 1.
Thank you. I second. You're fighting each other there. So, Councillor Smith? Sorry. There we go. Do you wish to speak to it, Councillor O'Keefe?
Thank you. It's my understanding that the sewer situation in Tea Gardens, and Hawk's Nest for that matter, is currently at capacity. And I'm also aware now that the plan in place in this DA is the best possible one. So it's really just a matter of process at this point. And there's really no reason to go against it. So thank you.
Thank you. Further speakers? Was there somewhere over here who wanted to speak to it? No? Nothing else? All right. I'll put the motion. All in favour? It is, everybody. Motion's carried. Moving to 16.2. This is a modification of the Shop Top housing development at Tuncurry. Council is in receipt of a modification, MOD 2023/0313, to an existing approved mixed-use development at No. 1 Wharf Street, Tuncurry. The application proposes a variation to the Clause 4.3 height of building and Clause 4.4 floor space ratios applying to the site. The proposed variation exceeds 10% and therefore requires the consent of council. 14 submissions have been received objecting to the proposal. Can I have a mover, please?
Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Tickle.
Mayor, sorry. I could ask the note takers to please bring it.
Sorry, can I just get to that? Yes, sir.
Yeah, if the note takers please bring it up. There's an additional condition of consent proposed to what was published. So move as follows. The modification MOD 2023/0313 to existing approved mixed-use development at 1 Wharf Street, Tuncurry, be approved subject to the modified conditions outlined in Attachment 1. And in addition to that, 21A, dilapidation report, as written. I probably will need to read this out, but get it on the record, would I not?
No, it's okay. It'll be printed.
All right.
So we've added an extra condition, if you like. Is it called a condition?
I'll wait for a second before I respond. Yep.
So we don't need the reason down there. So the motion will be those three paragraphs there. Yep. Everybody should be familiar with that. There was a discussion. So can I have a seconder for that, please? Thank you. Sorry, I've got Councillor Graham. Let's just speak to it, Councillor.
Just briefly, in relation to the additional condition of consent over and above what was published, there was a concern expressed over dilapidation. That was the risk to adjoining property. That has been taken on board and it's been covered by that addition to the conditions of consent. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Graham, did you wish to speak to it? No? Anyone else? No? Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. I will be voting for this, but I remain troubled by the height. The height limit for the developments in that region is 12 metres, and there can be up to a 10%. So take it up to 13.2 metres. This does go up to 16.1 metres. So I trouble myself with consistency. We have, and I have supported developments in a similar area where the lift well has to sit above the top floor, otherwise the lift can't get to the top floor. That makes perfect sense. So the lift well often sits above and sometimes pushes the building above the height limits, and we have approved similar ones before. This one in the design is a lift well plus a sort of an outdoor, slightly roofed area. And I heard the argument in the workshop, and I accept the argument that a lift well by itself kind of looks a bit ugly, but if you can put a bit of a roof around it, it just looks better, which is a better outcome for the surrounding community. You want to look up at a nice-looking building, not an ugly lift well. I hear that. What I am concerned about is that the next one has a slightly bigger pergola, and the one after that puts some walls on it, and that we end up with actually 16.1 metre tall buildings with the excuse of the lift well. So I do remain a little bit concerned by that height, but in this particular instance, I'm satisfied there's enough consistency with my previous decisions that I will be supporting it.
Thank you, Councillor Miller. I'm of the same view on that one. Any further speakers? No, I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. Motion's carried. What am I doing?
Anyone against?
Oh, sorry. I thought everybody had their hand up. No. I beg your pardon. I am rushed too much. So those against? Thank you, Councillor O'Keefe, voted against. Thank you for catching me. This is a multi-dwelling housing at 2 Bunyan Avenue, Olba. Development application DA 2023/0074 6 consent for the construction of three dwellings as multi-dwelling housing at 2 Bunyan Avenue, Olba. 19 submissions have been received in relation to the application. Therefore, determination of the application is required to be made by council. All issues raised in the submissions have been addressed through the assessment of the application with appropriate conditions of consent applied where necessary. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. I move the development application DA 2023/0075 for the construction of three dwellings as multi-dwelling housing on lot 13 DP 1243711, 2 Bunyan Avenue, Olbar, be approved subject to the conditions contained in Attachment 1.
Thank you very much. A seconder, Councillor Smith. Do you wish to speak to it, Councillor Miller?
Thank you, Mayor. I do note that there have been 19 submissions on this, and I do also note that the developer has made some changes to site setbacks and whatnot that have addressed some of those concerns. In the end, Council is guided purely by planning grounds. So the castle lied to us. The vibe of the thing does not enter into our decisions, unfortunately. But the other thing I would note is that we do talk about the housing crisis. We do talk about the need for more dwellings, more opportunities for people to find a house, more choices, more different types of dwellings. And so this multi-dwelling on this block in Bunyan Avenue, I think, does address that. It gets three dwellings into the footprint of what might be a normal house if you looked at it from the roof. So I understand the submissions. I think sufficient changes have been made, and getting three more units in there does give more houses for people, which is a good outcome.
Thank you. Councillor Smith?
I just want to agree with Councillor Miller that the idea of more housing in that corner block is acceptable. A little worried about the fact that there's a lack of trees along that new old bar development. That seems to be a problem. And very few of the new developments in Old Bar have any affordable housing marked out. But when we add a few more houses or a townhouse kind of situation, it brings the availability up for the people who are our skilled workers, and I do appreciate that.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Tickle.
Thank you, Mayor. I will pick up on a point made by objectors and also that a few that did speak this morning, as pointed out by Councillor Miller and endorsed by Councillor Smith. There has been extensive assessment on this, as is appropriate. But I'll draw the attention to one key piece, and that is the floor space ratio. And it's a point that Councillor Miller did allude to. The floor space ratio of the was essentially three dwellings is within the ratio that would be permissible if it were one dwelling. If you look at, if you actually add up the floor area of those three dwellings, it's not dissimilar to what it might be with one dwelling constructed. The uniqueness, or not so much the uniqueness of the design, but the design element of this development fully uses what is a corner block. There's entrance from one street, there's a second entrance from another street, which is an effective point of separation when you look at multiple occupancy. In terms of amenity issues, if you look at it's a new home surrounded by new homes, it is not dissimilar as far as amenity concerns are. So the assessment the council officers have made, which is extensive, ought to be supported by the decision of council, and I would urge council to vote in favour of the recommendation, which is to approve. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor O'Keefe.
Again, based on what I've read and been told about this one, the overall area of the lot is significantly smaller compared to what's being squeezed onto it. I'd also point out that the issue of the housing crisis is not going to be solved by building more houses. It's going to be solved by lowering the price of houses so that people can actually buy them. I would only can easily imagine that all three dwellings, were they to go into this lot, would all be sold for the same price, and it would not be below market price today.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Beasley.
Thank you, Mayor. I lived in an area like this just before coming here to the Mid-Coast, and there was, and I do think it was a corner block, that had something like this on it. Now, the whole area was single-storey dwellings on quite small blocks. And this particular building was built without council agreeing to it, and then there'd been some to and froing take place after that. So it was looked upon very poorly by everyone else in the whole area. I wonder whether this might happen to this particular place. I understand that it fits within guidelines, planning guidelines. As a sense of creating a community in this little spot, I don't know. And my personal feeling about having lived in a place like this is that I don't think I would accept it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No. I'll put the motion. All in favour? Okay. And those against? Councillor O'Keefe and Beasley Ann Howard have voted against. The remaining five have voted for, so the motion's carried. Oh. Item 16.4, dual occupancy shed and swimming pool. What are we doing? Sorry, I'm moving too quickly again. Thank you there. So we've got, should be 5-4. Oh, no, there's more. There's 10 of us here. There'll be seven, four. It flicked up very quickly then. 3 against 7-4. Yep. Everybody's happy with that? Thank you. Now I can go to 16.4, which is the dual occupancy shed and swimming pool at Tarbuck Bay. Development application DA 2024/06466, consent for the erection of a dwelling, shed and swimming pool to create a dual occupancy on rural property located at 155 Tarbuck Park Road, Tarbuck Bay. The proposal includes a clause 4.6 variation to clause 4.2B of the Great Lakes Local Environment Plan 2014 for the prescribed maximum separation distance between dual occupancies. The application proposes a separation distance of 169 metres between the dwellings, representing a 69% variation to the 100 metre development standard. Therefore, the application is referred to Council for determination. Mover, please. Thank you, Councillor Howard.
So I move the I move the development application DA 2024/0646 for the erection of a dwelling, shed and swimming pool to create a dual occupancy at 155 Tarbuck Bay Road, Tarbuck Bay, be approved subject to the conditions contained in Attachment 1. I don't wish to speak to it.
Thank you. Seconder, please. Councillor Turnbull, does anyone wish to speak on this one? No. All right, I can put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. It's carried. Next item is 16.5, detached dual occupancy at Carey Road, Wingham. Development application DA 2024/0704. Six, consent for the erection of a detached dwelling creating a dual occupancy on a rural property located at number 106 Carey Road, Wingham. The proposal includes a clause 4.6 variation to clause 4.2C of the Greater Taree Local Environment Plan 2010 for the prescribed maximum separation distance between dual occupancies on RU1 primary production zoned land parcels. The application proposes a separation distance of 397 metres between the dwellings. This equates to a 297% variation to the required maximum 100 metres separation between dwellings as per the LEP. The variation exceeds 10% and is therefore referred to Council for determination. So a mover, please. Councillor Graham.
Yeah. I move that the development application DA 2024/0646 for a detached dwelling creating a dual occupancy at the 106 Carey Road, Wingham, be approved subject to conditions contained in Attachment 1.
Thank you. Seconder? Thank you, Councillor Turnbull. Does anyone wish to discuss this one? Yes, please. Can I ask you, Councillor Graham, to turn your mic off?
Sure.
Thank you.
Just have a little update. The DA number is incorrect in the recommendation. It's not consistent with the DA number in the summary.
You are quite correct.
But for this and the previous one, it really just makes logical sense. So I really support.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
So I'm just, well, I need to check with the director which one is correct. We've got the heading and the summary use one number and the recommendation uses another. Has it been copied from the previous one? Yes.
Through the meeting, one of the heading is correct. It's a typo from the previous.
So we just need to make sure that the motion reads DA 2024/0704. Thank you for that, Councillor. Anyone wish to debate it? No? Thank you, Councillor Beazle.
Thank you, Mayor. Just quickly, I know this block. A friend of mine used to own it. In fact, these people might have bought it from him, and it's a very unusual shape. The fact that there is such a large variation is because of the unusual way that it comes to the road. And the fact that we today will hopefully pass it is a very sensible move. We had some dual occupancies in the LGA.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No? I'll put them out. Who? Dira. Sorry, Councillor Smith.
Thank you. I just wanted to note that our planners who have brought these motions forward have actually referenced our new draft LEP to make sure that, you know, just to say that, yes, it is different from what it was initially, but, you know, it'll work later on. So I like that.
Thank you, Councillor. Any further debate? No, I'll put the motion. All in favour? Double checking. Thank you. That is everybody's carried. Item 16.6, the Housing Barriers Review Implementation Plan Update. The Housing Barriers Review seeks to understand the barriers which unnecessarily complicate the development assessment process and or impede the delivery of good housing outcomes within the Mid-Coast Council local government area. By understanding these barriers, Council can work towards internal process improvements, industry engagement and the ongoing development of its planning controls to best meet the challenges of the current housing market. The report provides an update on the implementation plan within the Housing Barriers Review Findings Report. Can I have a mover, please? Thank you, Councillor Turnbull.
I move that Council note the content of the report.
Thank you. Seconder? Sea of hands. Councillor Tickle. Do you wish to speak to it, Councillor Turnbull? Anyone else? No? All right. I'll put the motion. All in favour? Is carried unanimously. Next report is the 16.7, the Mid-Coast Economic Outlook and Industry Analysis Report. This report presents the Mid-Coast Economic Outlook and Industry Analysis Report produced by the Hadron Group on behalf of Mid-Coast Council. The Mid-Coast Economic Outlook and Industry Analysis Report is the first of its kind for the region and is based on an analysis of available data. The report is an important tool to better understand the Mid-Coast economy and help to determine future strategic actions to drive the local economy. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Smith.
I move that the Council notes the Mid-Coast Economic Outlook an industry analysis report, and the Mid-Coast Economy at a Glance infograph.
Thank you. Seconder, please. Councillor O'Keefe, would you like to speak to it, Councillor Smith?
Yes, look, Mayor, this is a very important document that's now been produced by our staff and brought to the public, and it will be even having a bigger splash with public in the future. But for me, it's the kind of document that I always thought we should have, in the sense that if you wanted your brother, who was involved in environmental business or something kind of into the future, to come here and manufacture or make something, this is the place he's going to look. What is this about? This book will this Hadron report really goes through it thoroughly, and it names the kind of changes that are coming, and it puts us off as a council which hasn't necessarily gotten so crowded with things that there's nothing left to do. It makes us a council where there's some blank pages, and there certainly is a place for continuing on into the future with really, really good ideas and programs. So I would really recommend people who are interested, look at this document, and it will be out in the future as well, done by the Hadron and looked at by our staff and brought that by our Manager of Economic and Destination Development, Tanya Lippis. We didn't have one of those before. And the fact we do just says, hey, you know, come on in, you important and smart and environmental people. Good to see you.
Thank you, Councillor Smith. Thank you. Councillor Tickle.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. The report is a great piece of work, and I was wondering, General Manager, whether we could take it on board that we do more work with this in terms of a workshop session to pull out where we go further with this. I guess where I can see the direction that council may be able to go with this is when you look at the opportunity between the various chambers of commerce, maybe meetings in the two of the larger areas where you've got the likes of your real estate agents, industry and so on. So here's where it is. Here's the opportunity. And look at where, I guess, council walks alongside the community and those opportunities are there. As I've said many times before, the normal business of council is a massive economic driver. And just what we do every day is has an impact in economic development. But this document certainly does point to opportunities that the whole of the community and those interested need to have buy-in, because Midcase is certainly open for business, and to be open for business, we need people prepared to help drive it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Jim?
Oh, good suggestions, Councillor. Thank you. We'll take all that on board. It's largely where we're headed in any event, but thank you.
Yeah. And we're meeting with the business chambers in a couple of weeks, and this will be on the agenda for there, so that helps kick it off. All right, so no further speakers. Councillor O'Keefe.
The fact that this is the first report of its kind for the region is remarkable on many levels. However, I'll focus on the positive, and I very much look forward to using this sort of data to help drive jobs, which I see as second only to roads in major issues for this LGA. That's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Further speakers, Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. As Councillor Smith said, we created the economic development strategy in the last term of council, and before that we didn't have an economic development strategy for Mid-Coast Council. And from that strategy comes all sorts of excellent actions that are taking place, from the extension of Pelican Boardwalks through to things that are happening behind the scenes of restructures here behind council, to the way we work with business. And the Mayor might be sick of me saying so, but what I always say is that economic development only works when local government walks hand in hand with the business community. And this report certainly helps us do that. It's the next pillar. So this report looks at the key sectors for economic growth, and it sets an industry segmentation framework for a more focused approach for investment attraction, which is really important. How do we bring more businesses and more jobs here? How do we engage with the industry? And how do we develop new programs for economic development? It looks at industries facing challenges, which is really important. It looks at the industries that are currently our economic pillars and holding us up. What are the main drivers now? And what are the dynamics of high growth potential industries into the future? So I'm glad to hear that there are plans to be working very closely with Chambers of Commerce and others. This report is a very important tool, and I look forward to learning more about it, unpacking it, and working with our business and local industries on how to get the most out of this report over the coming months.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No, I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. It's carried. Thank you. 16.8, not 18.6. This is the Mid-Coast Council Power Purchase Agreement contract. In March 2024, Mid-Coast Council delegated authority to the General Manager to execute contracts for the supply of electricity for large market sites and street lighting, subject to a successful tendering process. The electricity contract has now been executed with Iberdrola Australia, and this report details the result as well as the progress. Could I have a mover, please? Thank you, Councillor Tickle.
Thank you, Mayor. I move the council note the signing of the electricity contract with Iberdrola for the period 2025-2030 for street lighting, and 2026 to 2030 for large sites.
Thank you. Seconder, please. Councillor Miller. Councillor Tickle.
Speaking briefly, Mayor, by way of background, Council being a member of the Joint Regional Organisation and joining with a number of other councils, this has given, the benefit of economy of scale, and I guess a bulk submission to electricity providers to get the best deal we can. Not only has it come out as a good deal in terms of pricing, but it is powered by renewables. We are not looking at coal-fired electricity in this particular contract. This is lining up with Council's climate change initiative, our responsibility to the environment. So it's a win on two fronts, both in terms of pricing to the community, working collaboratively with other councils, but also giving a positive environmental outcome. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Thank you, Councillor Graham.
Yes, well, it's great that we need to get a better electricity contract. It seems to be the emphasis being put on renewable electricity. Renewables, it's not possible to have a baseload power supply with renewables, i.e. solar or wind farms. It's just not possible. So we're basically putting all eggs in one basket, and a basket I think that's not going to be viable in the long term. Once we finish shutting down all the coal-fired power stations, we are going to be totally renewable, and that will be a serious issue with regards to power. We're going to see blackouts, and we're already being warned of that. So I think it's very unwise to be putting all our efforts into renewables just to basically save some CO2 emissions, which is irrelevant anyway. So,
thank you. Further speakers, Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor.
Microphone. Yeah. Thank you, Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a good outcome. This is just tidying up a delegation that was given to the General Manager by the previous council to go ahead and negotiate this. It was negotiated with a group of 13 regional councils by working together. You know, it's just like BILO. By working together in a buying group, you can get better prices. There's an unintentional ad for BILO. I apologise for that. But by working with 13 regional councils, we do get a much better rate on the electricity. And guess what? It is also better for the environment. And guess what? The invisible carbon reductions are a good thing. We do have a net zero aim that has been adopted by council. This helps towards that. But it also saves us money. And it's great to be locked in to a sizable power contract for our large sites and for our streetlights. It's a lot of power that we use, and we're locked in over a good period of time to make sure that we are protected with that low price locked in, and that's a great result for ratepayers.
Thank you. Further speakers, Councillor Smith. Councillor Smith.
I just wanted to say that this is about council power, and the other power is the power of the communities that are all outlying of our major areas. So I'm really hopeful that things like what's happened around Manila near Tamworth could occur here, where a community would get together near Harrington or Tea Garden and work on some different types of power that they can sell to each other and work on. And it would really even enhance our climate change ideas to a higher level. And lucky for us, we have a sustainable and climate change officer.
Thank you, Councillor. Any further speakers? Councillor Wilson.
If I could, a question to the Director of Livable Communities. This contract is for the supply of energy, preferably green. And if there is no green, we'll still be supplied with energy, won't we?
That's correct.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Beasley.
Thank you, Mayor. As someone who proudly had on his fence until it was stolen, a core flute with I Love CO2 on it, it's a great shame to see the end of coal-fired power stations. CO2 is a plant food. It's contributed to the whole of the world being considerably greener over the last 40 years in places that actually were the driest. So it's greener in the Sahara, and it's certainly greener in Western Australia. There is an upside to the climate changing. In regard to this particular, which of course I need to get to this particular motion, It does seem like a good deal. Now, we hopefully will not find ourselves in a situation in a few years' time where a company which has given a good deal to so many people finds itself in difficult financial straits because the cost of electricity has gone up so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any further speakers? No, I shall put Councillor Howard.
Question to the director through you, the mayor. If the cost of electricity goes up, that's the whole point of having the contract, isn't it? That we are locked in at a certain rate?
Yeah, through the mayor, the contract locks us in over a 5-year period, so we don't pay more.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Don't think there's many left. Okay, put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. And those against? So we had Councillor Graham voting against, everybody else voted for. Motion's carried. Moving to 16.9, which is the Capital Projects Status Report for Public Spaces. This report provides a status update on key projects delivered by the Public Spaces team and highlights potential issues with schedule, costs or impacts on delivery. Mover, please. Councillor O'Keefe.
Thank you. I move that the Public Spaces monthly project status report be noted.
Thank you. Seconder. Councillor Turnbull. Thank you. Wish to speak to it, Councillor O'Keefe?
No, thanks.
Sorry, shake your head. Councillor Turnbull, did you wish to speak to it? No? Any speakers on this item? No? I'll put the motion. Councillor Miller. Yeah.
Thank you, Mayor, because I am excited about a couple of things in this report. The Tari Albert Street amenities, the ones that are sort of across the road from the post office at the top of that car park behind Bilo, second mention, in Tari. Those Albert Street amenities have been due for an upgrade for so long, and I'm thrilled to see them on the list here. They definitely need it. Also great to see progress on the Blackhead Skate Park and the Pelican Boardwalk. But the new playground that's being built in the Endeavour Reserve, sort of near the rowing club behind KFC in Tari, I haven't seen the plans for what the final playground looks like, but it's to replace the playground that used to be near the old RSL down the bottom of Pulteney Street across the road from the old council chambers. That one got damaged in the flood, and I believe there was flood money to replace it. We've chosen to move it up towards the Endeavour Reserve where there's more space for kids to play, and I suppose by KFC, but maybe that's an unintended outcome. But the playground looks fantastic. There's the work that's going on there, it looks like it's going to be much bigger than the playground that is existing and much better than the playground's existing, and that's a great outcome.
Thank you, Councillor. Anything further? No, I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. Motion's carried. 16.10, Monthly Projects Status Report for Natural Systems. This report provides a status update on key projects delivered by the Natural Systems team and highlights potential issues with schedule, cost or impacts on delivery. Can I have a mover, please? Thank you, Councillor Turnbull.
I move that the Natural Systems monthly project status report be noted.
Thank you. And a seconder? Councillor O'Keefe, does anyone wish to speak to this one? No? No speakers? All right, put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. Carried. 16.11 is the monthly Capital Works Project Status Report for Waste Services. This report provides a status update on key projects delivered by the Waste Services team and highlights potential issues with schedule, costs or impacts on delivery. Mover, please. Councillor Tickle.
Thank you, Mayor. Move that the Waste Services monthly project status report be noted.
Thank you. Seconder. Councillor Turnbull, does anyone wish to speak to it? No? I'll put the motion. All in favour? As everybody? It's carried. What is duly noted? Moving to 16.12, which is the development determinations for October 2024. This report outlines each of the development determinations which have been issued during October 2024. Mover, please. Councillor Howard.
Yes, I move that the report be noted.
Thank you. Seconder. Councillor Tickle. Does anyone wish to speak to it?
Thank you, Ma'am.
Councillor Tickle.
Just that briefly, Mayor. The 113 development determinations made during October indicates the staff have certainly been busy with that process. However, it continues the, trend where the degree of development activity has come off a bit. That has been the trend. We've certainly had a busy period of the last 2 years, but that appears to be the case. And certainly feedback with the local building community. So it's something to bear in mind when we think about economic development and the likes. We're not immune to flatlining, and this is, I guess, an air of caution that this is indicating with the current level of development activity and their approvals. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No. I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. Thank you. Motion's carried. Next item is 16.13. I believe we've got a conflict of interest. Someone was going to leave the room. This is the matters currently before the Land Environment Court. This report both lists and provides an update on matters that are currently before the Land Environment Court. And Councillor Beasley has left the room. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor O'Keefe.
I move that this report be noted.
Thank you. Seconder? Councillor Turnbull. Any debate? No. Put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. That's everybody of those present. Councillor Beasley is returning to the room. Thank you, Councillor Beasley. We passed that, carried that motion. 17.1 is the monthly capital works project status report. This monthly report provides the status of major infrastructure and engineering projects and highlights potential issues with schedule, cost or impacts of delivery. Move, please. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. I move that the monthly project status report be received and gateway reports endorsed.
Thank you. Seconder? Councillor Turnbull, does anyone wish to discuss it? Yes, Councillor Miller.
I had a question for the Director for Infrastructure and Engineering Services through the General Manager, if I may, which is on Cedar Party Bridge, which is probably the biggest and possibly most visible infrastructure piece of work that's happening at the moment. There is an update in the report, but could the Director just give us an update on how that project is tracking?
Yeah, since the opening of the bypass back in the end of September, the changed traffic conditions have been settling in quite well. The biggest issue or implications we've had with that is the congestion of parking around the interfaces of the construction site with existing users, and we're doing our best to work with the contractors, subcontractors and all the other people involved in the project to minimise the impact on the surrounding community. In terms of the construction progress, the dry weather we've had over the last couple of weeks has been really good. It did hamper our early progress towards getting the bypass opened and delayed that by several months, actually. And the first sections of the bridge started coming down last week, which has been fantastic to sort of see that progress, because once the existing bridge is out of the way, then you'll really start to see work ramp up on site. Most of the preparations are complete for the piling works to commence, and I'm hoping that we'll soon see a piling rig turn up on site and start to work on the abutments at either site and getting the piles in. It'll be good for that particular construction project to get up out of the ground whilst it is dry, because it is susceptible to impacts of flooding, and there's a risk that work will have to be redone if there's an event whilst we're in the construction phases right in the bottom of the river. Interestingly, the heavy rainfall we had just a couple of weeks ago did result in a rapid increase in the creek levels of Cedar Party Creek, but it stopped short of coming over the temporary bypass that's in, which is the very large steel culvert system that we've put in place as a temporary measure to keep people across. We do have a procedure for that if it does become closed, and we can implement that fairly quickly, advise motorists to use alternative routes and go round. So at this stage, all is looking well heading in towards Christmas.
Thank you, Director. Certainly been a lot of community comment on how well that work's progressing at the moment, which is great. Any further speakers? No, I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. Motion's carried. Jumping to 17.2, Water and Systems Monthly Performance Report. The report provides key information on the performance of our water and wastewater services. Move it, please. Councillor Turnbull.
I move that the Water and Systems Monthly Performance Report for October 2024 be received and compliance with the guidelines and licence conditions be noted.
Thank you. Seconder? Second. Councillor Howard, thank you. Do you wish to speak to it, Councillor Turnbull?
Yes. Thank you. Health and safety is very important to me, so I'm really excited to see in one particular chemical, in fact, PFOS, has not been detected. So I love to see that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Miller.
Just expanding on Councillor Turnbull's point about PFAS, which has been, I know there's been a lot in the media, I think Daily Telegraph has been talking about this, and the new guidelines, which are phenomenally low levels of PFAS under the new incoming guidelines. I know we've always been within the current guidelines, and I believe from this report we're within the proposed guidelines, which I would have thought were almost impossible to follow because it's, I think the report says it's like one drop of water in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. It's very, very low levels that are now allowable. Could the director just perhaps confirm for me that the proposed guidelines, which are extraordinarily low levels of PFAS, those forever chemicals, at this point we are within those guidelines?
We are from that perspective, and to give you an example, one of the criteria moves from 70 nanograms per litre to 4 nanograms per litre in terms of its restriction. All of the areas that we tested, or I should say, should backtrack a little bit, we had acknowledged that the catchment area that we have for our drinking water supplies is low risk for PFAS contamination. It doesn't generally contain those sorts of activities that are known to have generated it, keeping in mind that PFAS is, and related chemicals are prevalent in lots of different things that happen in our modern society. So we knew we were low risk. Our previous information suggested that, wasn't an issue for us. And what this testing does confirm is that we are below the detection limits of modern testing methods, which means we're not even anywhere near the guideline values. We're actually below the testing limits, which is why they have a result of less than 1 nanogram per litre or less than 1 mil in an Olympic swimming pool, because they can't detect it at any lower levels. Not saying it's not there in absolutely minute trace levels, but it's below the level of our modern science capability to detect it.
Thank you. Any further? Yes, Councillor Beasley.
Could I ask through the General Manager of the Director, so I noted here that there was 1 staff injury and 2 near misses. Could you fill us in on that, please?
I'll have to take the details of the injury on notice, but generally what we're reporting there is the attention of our staff towards positive reporting culture and working on the theory that if we are mindful of the risks and reporting on the risks, then we're doing something about it. We get the small things right, then the big things we'll also get right. So that's reflecting on that, and I'll provide separate information back to councillors on the nature of the particular accident. Keeping in mind, we do work both across transport and water. We do a lot of high-risk activities that involve, earth-moving equipment, working at heights, working with electricity, working in confined spaces and working with chemicals. So we have a very comprehensive safety management system that accompanies that. And whilst we might have reports, I think that's a positive thing, because what that demonstrates is that our staff are willing to put their hand up and say, hey, there's an issue here, which gives us a chance to intervene before it becomes an issue that results in irreparable damage or death associated with that. Just as a modest statistic to highlight to the group, working in around moving plants, actually one of the highest causes of workplace deaths in Australia. There's almost a death nearly every day associated with, there's about 200 a year in Australia associated with moving plant. Obviously we have a very large fleet of moving plant, and we are currently implementing a major safety program, which is a compulsory undertaking
that was issued by Transport for New South Wales for work on state roads as part of a coronial inquiry into a death in Walgett back a few years ago. That's something that's been rolled out across the state, and we're one of the first councils to have achieved almost all of our staff being trained in that revised safety package.
Thank you. And just to be very clear, because our previous conversation on that had focused on the PFAS, the injury report is across the entire water services, which is all those plants and all that all those outdoor workers. Someone over here, Councillor Smith.
Yes, through the mayor to the water engineer and person in charge. I'd just like to see if it's possible for you to tell us some of the special Christmas animals that are near our water in Budua.
I don't have any particular Christmas animals, but one of the things that we've been working in with our between our divisions, both infrastructure and engineering and livable communities around Budua, is recognising the significance of that area and the protected catchment around the dam for koala species. It wasn't intended that way, but it's certainly proven to be that way, and our studies have shown that we've got some work that we're doing in terms of trying to expand on that and create greater safe havens, because obviously what's good for koalas is also good for water quality, and that's things like a protected catchment area, no dogs or vehicles allowed in that catchment area, and it just has two positive benefits for the security of our water supply and also for the benefit of the koala population in that area, which is rather significant.
Thank you. Any further? Councillor Wilson.
Just quickly, Budua Dam, stable at 99% full, fantastic. Water is very, very important, as we all know. The quality is at 99.9, which is absolutely amazing. And I'd like to congratulate and applaud the staff on their open days through Water Week in October. Very well received and a great opportunity for the ratepayers to see what it takes to get clean water. So thank you.
Indeed. Any further speakers? No. I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. Carried. Thank you. Moving to 17.3, which is the Foster and Tuankari Hire e-scooter trial 12-month report. Could I have a – no, I'm going to read it first. This is the report on the end of the 12-month trial of e-scooters, hire e-scooters in Foster and Tuankari. Now I'm over. Councillor Tickle.
Thank you, Mayor. I move that the Foster Tuankari Hire e-scooter trial be extended to June 30th, 2025 until the regulator provisions on e-scooters from the New South Wales government become known.
Thank you, Councillor Tickle. Can I ask you to add a second paragraph, which we did talk about earlier today, which the minute takers could bring up? We just wanted to include in the motion that Council appoint Councillor Peter Howard to replace former Councillor Catherine Smith on the stakeholder committee for this. Are you happy with that?
Happy to move Thank you. Mayor, thank you.
And could I have a seconder, please? Thank you, Councillor Smith. Councillor Tickle?
Yeah, look, just brief, I'm going to draw on the report, which is certainly some amazing stats, and it's been well documented that the trial and activity has been one of the most successful conducted by this supplier. 63,206 total trips and a massive 126,675 kilometres, which is incredible. It's been quite an attraction for tourists, in particular when they're there, but even when the tourist area season not as its peak, there's still quite a deal of activity. And I guess one of the side benefits is perhaps there'd be someone would jump on an e-scooter rather than a motor vehicle, which is certainly handy when you with traffic congestion. But it certainly has worked well. There's been some teething problems at times, which has been addressed. There's a great spirit of cooperation that's been evidenced by the supplier, and hopefully, as the trial continues and regulation continues, this will be a great acquisition for this community. Look, I will add, Mayor, it's a point that Councillor Smith asked earlier about Christmas animals. I'm not quite sure was relevant to this motion, but I can guarantee that if the cat runs up the beach, you're sure to find some sandy claws.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Howard?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. When this trial started a year ago, there was a lot of apprehension in the room, and quite rightly so. There was, considerable speculation out in the community and even amongst councils.
No, you haven't got it on. The stalk. The stalk.
Oh, sorry. There we go. Okay. Let me start again. When this trial began 12 months ago, Mayor, there was considerable apprehension in the community, and quite rightly so. And it wasn't just in the community, it was even amongst the councillors in the room. How many of these scooters would end up in the drink? How many would be fished out by our local fishermen? How many injuries would we see? How many near misses would we see? And I'm pleased to see in the report there's only been one serious incident, I believe, where somebody had their jaw broken, and that was a matter that seems to be perhaps alcohol-related. Overall, the amount of scooters that end up in the water, and the amount of injuries caused, and the amount of near misses seems to be far less than perhaps what was speculated. And that's pleasing because they were brought in for one reason and one reason only. We were asked by the state government to conduct this trial in the area, and we saw it as an opportunity for the Great Lakes to trial a new initiative, something that was, a bit more green-friendly in the way of transportation, something that, a younger audience might find as an attraction during, school holiday periods and even just on weekends, something fun to do. And to have the scooters used to the point where, if you stretched all the trips out end-to-end, they would go around the world twice comfortably, seems to indicate that, they have been embraced by the community. And I support the trial going ahead for another 6 months and look forward to it being successful again.
Thank you, Councillor. Further speakers? Councillor Graham first, then Beasley.
Yeah, look, I'd like to speak for it. While I'm not a big fan of electric vehicles per se, I'm more of a diesel man myself. We won't get that way. I'm all for encouraging smaller business. This seems to be a pretty good little business they're running, and I'm all for getting people have a fair go. So, yeah, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Beasley.
Thank you, Mayor. I wonder what the ridership, it's a funny word, isn't it? As soon as I said it, data is compared against. So total trip, 63,206. I wonder how many people bipedally would have taken those trips anyway. Sure, they're on an electric bike that is probably in my way. But when I look at something like the total distance travelled, 126,000 kilometres, it's certainly a long way. If they could just go a long way away from here, I'd be much happier. The average number of trips per rider, 4.5, does that indicate that on their fifth trip they fell off something? It's a funny sort of number. I'm certainly not a fan. They, as I said, they seem to be in the way. They're left everywhere. They're a blight on the look of the place. There's some upsides. I'm sure Mr. Cooper thinks that there are plenty. I see very few. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No? I'll put the motion. All in favour? And those against? Councillor Beasley voted against. All others voted for. Motion's carried. Moving to 17.4. Minutes of the Local Traffic Committee. Held on 17th of October 2024. This report presents the minutes of the Local Traffic Committee held on 17 October 2024 for adoption. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Miller.
I move that the minutes of the Local Traffic Committee meeting held 17 October 2024 be noted and that the recommendations are adopted.
Thank you. Seconder? Councillor Turnbull. Councillor Miller.
Yes, the actual minutes and the outcomes of the traffic committee are in the attachment agenda, which is public, but it is worth drawing out a couple of things from those attachments because you wouldn't see them if you just look through the agenda papers themselves. One is the new timed parking that will be coming into Winter Street at the request of one of the medical practices there who spoke to us this morning, the Heart Centre. I think that is a good outcome because anyone who's ever tried to park anywhere near the hospital or that health precinct knows that it's almost impossible to find a park, particularly for people who, you know, might be short of breath or having health issues and need to park close to where they're going. So those timed two-hour parks and accessible parks will be very useful in York Street and it'll help to free up some parking in that area, which is very important. The other part, just to pull out, is the work to reduce congestion on Kinka Road, the new no overnight parking and no stopping and the other traffic conditions through there. I'm sure there'll be communications to the public as those new arrangements come in, but it's good to see that the Traffic Committee is doing work to help with that congestion, particularly around peak times in Kinka Road.
Yeah, which is in Seal Rocks, and yep. We have problems every Christmas, so it's good. Any further speakers? No? I'll put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. That is everybody. All right. Moving to 18.1, Council meeting schedule for 2023. This report provides a recommended ordinary Council meeting schedule for 2025 calendar year. Can I have a mover, please, remembering that we have an amendment to make? Thank you, Councillor Turnbull.
I move that the ordinary council meeting schedule for 2025 contained in the report be adopted with the minor edit of Wednesday the 3rd of September. We have that starting at 9 when that one should be 2 p.m, please.
Thank you. Seconder for that one, please. Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? No? I'll put the motion. All in favour? Is everybody? It's carried. Next one is the business.
Just waiting for the minute to come up. Just want to check it. No, that was. It was not.
My apologies.
We don't want to get the minute takers offside, councillors, so we will be patient. And there's plenty of time.
No,
thanks, councillor. No. There we go. So the changes there with the minor edit. Yep, that's great. And everybody voted for. Thank you. Gets us to 18.2, Business Transformation Program Progress Update. The purpose of this report is to provide Council with a progress update on the implementation of the Business Transformation Program. Move it, please. Councillor Wilson.
I move that the Council notes the Business Transformation Program update.
Thank you. Seconder? Councillor Turnbull? Councillor Wilson, do you speak to it?
This is an important program. Looking forward to future updates. It's showing the benefits and the costs through the duration, I think, over 5 years. So
thank you.
That's all.
For the speakers? No, I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody. Motion's carried. Moving to 18.3, so the appointment of representatives to committees and establishment of General Manager's Performance Review Panel. This report presents suggested councillor representatives to be appointed to a range of committees. I'm going to move this motion. We've had to have considerable discussion out of session to be able to propose this, and we'll bring it up on the screen. It's quite lengthy. Okay. Not sure if I need it. Should I read this out?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna move that councillors Howard, Turnbull, and Graham are appointed to the donation/funding assessment panel. that Mayor Ponton and Councillor Smith are appointed to the Aboriginal Reference Group with Mayor Ponton to the nominated chair. Number three is that Deputy Mayor Miller and Councillor Beasley are appointed to the Arts and Creative Industries Reference Group with Deputy Mayor Miller, the nominated chair. Four is that Councillors Tickle and Wilson are appointed to the Floodplain Management Advisory Group with Councillor Tickle, the nominated chair. Five is that Councillors Smith and O'Keefe are appointed to the Koala Reference Group with Councillor Smith, the nominated chair. Six is that Deputy Mayor Miller and Councillor Wilson are appointed to the Old Bar Manning Point Coastal Management Program Reference Group with Deputy Mayor Miller, the nominated chair. Seven, that Mayor Ponton and Councillor O'Keefe are appointed to the Southern Estuaries Coastal Management Program Reference Group with Mayor Ponton, the nominated chair. Eight, that the Mayor and Councillors O'Keefe, Wilson and Turnbull are appointed to the Policy Working Group with Mayor Ponton, the nominated chair. Nine, that Councillor Beasley is appointed as a representative to New South Wales Public Libraries. 10, that Council establish the General Manager's Performance Review Panel and nominate Councillor Ponton, Deputy Mayor Miller and Councillor Tickle to participate on the panel. Sub-item 1, that Council ask the General Manager, should he wish to nominate one Councillor to participate on the panel. 2, that Council delegate the process of performance management to the panel and the Mayor be delegated to sign the performance agreement. 3, that Council engages local government management solutions to assist the panel in the performance review process. And 4, that Council's manager, organisational strategy and people will be appointed as secretariat to the panel. It's a very lengthy one. I'll reserve my right to speak on that, and I'll call for a seconder, which I think I had Councillor Miller. Thank you. Any discussion? Yes, Councillor Graham.
Yes, I'd like to move an amendment to that that motion. I'd like to.
Can we bring it up on the screen? Yes. Again, sorry, ladies. And you're going to point us to section.
Section 10. Yeah, yep. I'd like to have my name added to that to be appointed to the General Manager's Performance Review Panel, please.
And who would you like to take off? Actually, you probably don't have any choice. It has to be Councillor Tickle.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if we could just replace that with Councillor Graham. Thank you. And I need a seconder for that. Councillor Beasley, thank you. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Graham?
Yeah, look, we have a number of committees that we can join. I believe my time is best spent potentially on this committee. I got 25% of the vote last election, and one of the issues is accountability and transparency in council. I believe as a newcomer, I can provide that. And I think that's what the best way I could represent my constituents. Thank you.
Thank you. So I just need to explain that one of the reasons why that wasn't recommended by me is that I'm trying to manage a potential perception of conflict of interest, in that it's been reported to me that a number of people who handed out for the Libertarian group during the election and the pre-poll were advocating for the general manager to be dismissed. And I think it's important that we manage that potential conflict, and therefore recommending that Councillor Graham, despite his fine qualities and ability to participate in that, just to be able to manage the potential conflict of interest, not be appointed to the committee. Can I have further speakers on that, please? Or anyone? Not compulsory. Thank you, Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll speak against the amendment on the basis that the experience of Councillor Tickle. So that particular panel, it is mandated that the Mayor and the Deputy Mayor are on there, and then the position that's sort of up for conversation is the Councillor position. Councillor Tickle was on that panel as Deputy Mayor, and I think having him on there with his experience in local government and also to provide continuity on that panel so that work that might have been happening over the last few years, there is continuity in that. And I think Councillor Tickle, whilst Councillor Graham would also be brings wisdom and experience to any panel that he joins, Councillor Tickle brings continuity to this particular panel that I think is a strength.
Thank you.
And I should add that the process that we follow, I always follow, having been responsible for this process for some time now, is that all councillors have an opportunity at each stage of the process to have full comprehensive input into it, and that will be organised. It'll just be a discussion with the panel ahead of the performance appraisals. Councillor Beasley.
Thank you, Mayor. Speaking of conflict, I find myself in a little bit of conflict right at the moment. It's a great shame that we can't have four on this panel. In seconding Councillor Graham's motion, I wouldn't want to in any way denigrate Councillor Tickle's experience and, of course, his financial ability that he would bring to something like this. The perception of what's gone on in the past is probably real, and I certainly wouldn't take any exception to that because I heard it myself. But since being here, I think that all of us have taken quite a collegial approach to working with each other. I think Councillor Graham would actually be a very useful other person on this, but as there's not four available, I'm going to support him for this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further speakers on this? No, you've had your opportunity to speak. Sorry.
Does he have a right of reply, Mayor?
Not for
not
an amendment.
Sorry, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Miller. No, it's fine. So if there's no further speakers, I'm going to put – there is a speaker who – Councillor Smith.
I'd just like to say, as a person who's not on either side of that, that I'd like to also be one of the possible councillors.
So, Councillor Smith, so we're in
it's
the middle
different amendments.
We're in one amendment. I mean, you could ask, I think you could ask Councillor Graham if he would add your name to the list, but I can't do that for an amendment. Thank you. That's fine. So we'll address this amendment, and then we can come to yours. So if there are no further speakers on the amendment, Councillor O'Keefe.
Is it at all possible to up the number of councillors on this thing?
No. The guidelines, which I circulated yesterday to everybody, are very clear that they request three people. There is an option for the general manager to appoint a fourth if he chooses to do so. We haven't asked him to do that yet, and I think maybe I need to ask him to do that. Or is it? You could express an opinion now, I guess, in the middle of this.
Well, my opinion is that I shouldn't need to have an independent or additional councillor appointed to represent myself or to provide support to myself, so I won't be nominating a councillor.
And that's consistent with the way it's been since the general manager was appointed. So the guidelines point to three people. So Councillor Wilson, did you have your hand up?
If I could speak against the motion.
The amendment?
The amendment, sorry. Yep. Amended the amendment. Look, I respect people when they campaigned. They wanted to get people's attention, and without a doubt, certainly some have got their attention. Now, their intentions may have been well-meaning. And it's however, it's crucial that we uphold ourselves to the highest standards of objectivity and being beyond reproach and without bias, so we can sensibly say there is no conflict. I don't think this amendment upholds that standard, and we must be without approach, and maybe that could come with time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further speakers on the amendment? Councillor Howard.
Yes, I didn't intend to speak to this, but I will say on the amendment, words matter. And what is said during an election campaign, whilst it might be electioneering, while it might make a nice soundbite, while it might end up with just under 25% of the vote, it doesn't necessarily, it matters if you get elected to council, because those words carry with you. And there were words I heard on the campaign trail that I believe would preclude Councillor Graham from being part of this panel.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Tickle.
Sam Mays has spoken, Mayor. I will speak. I'm not going to speak in terms of the pros and cons of Councillor Graham myself, but I just want to give a snapshot why, I guess, speaking against the amendment and for the motion has merit. It's been alluded to about experience, which is true in my case, but if you look at the process of the general manager's performance appraisal, I'm not talking about the general manager as a personality, I'm talking about the process. So I'll make that clear. It is robust. It's really setting down that these are the key elements of expectations of the whole organisation, and the general manager as the person in charge is ultimately accountable for that. The process is robust. Those objectives are quite clear, what's expected. And on top of that, there's also the personal objectives and the expectations of the general manager, how he conducts himself in the role. And that's also appraised on. The whole of the elected body has the opportunity to give input into what's important for the organisation going forward. And as was evidenced from the last appraisal period, we listened. We took that on board and we gave the feedback. And when it got to the appraisal point, as the Mayor alluded to, the appraisal went out as well, and the whole elected body were kept in the loop. It's a fair process. It's a robust process. And to make sure it is, there's an independent person as well who gives the oversight and guidance. So I can assure you that sitting around the table doing the appraisal, it is by no means a rubber stamp, because those who have been on the appraisal committee take that position quite seriously, because it's expected of by the elected body to do so. And as alluded to, we've come through a massive journey the last 2.5 years where the ship's been steered in a clear direction. We expect the ship to be cleared in an even better direction going forward. And the Mayor has a role there. The whole elected body has a role there. And it's absolutely crucial the general manager has that role. And that's part of what the appraisal and the objective setting is. So when it comes down to steering the ship and having him experienced to help drive that ship, I do believe that voting against the amendment in favour of the motion is probably at the time is right for that to occur. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Council. I don't think we've got any more speakers, have we? No. I'm going to put the amendment. All those in favour of the amendment, please raise your hand. Councillor Graham and Councillor Beasley and Councillor O'Keefe. Those against? Is now, Councillor Turnbull, if you're choosing to abstain, there is no such thing as abstaining. You're either voting for or against. If you choose to abstain, it gets recorded as against. So, yeah, okay. So that's everybody else in the room is voting for. So the amendment has been lost, which means that we go back to the original motion. I'm Councillor Miller.
I speak to the motion, Mayor.
Please.
So I'd just like to speak about the process of how we got here, because this is deciding council's appointees to 10 panels, which is quite a body of work, and making sure that, you know, different people get to be on different panels as much as we can. And we have, as Councillor Beasley said, we've been working mostly to consensus. There's disagreement on 1 out of 10. That's a 10%. You know, we've done pretty well. So the way that this has worked, although the public has seen it for the first time with the Mayor presenting a whole list of names, we've been working on this for, I think, about a month. It's been at numerous workshops. Names, all the committees were put up on a whiteboard. Names were put against a whiteboard. People then said, well, I'll withdraw myself from that one to leave room for you. And it has been a collegiate process, and I think very appropriate. And everyone's had the opportunity to have their say. I'll note we've had disagreement on one of them, which is fine. And of course, Councillor Graham is well within his rights. And so that's also been dealt with in the appropriate way, as it should. So it's been a very open and transparent process over about a month to get to the position where we're able to appoint councillors to 10 committees and panels. And what's also great is after the break of the election period and the caretaker period, and then getting to the point where we're appointing people, all of these committees have been on hold waiting for these appointments. So it's great to be now in a position where councillors are about to be appointed to all of these, and things like the Arts and Cultural References Group and the Coastal Management Program Reference Group can now get back underway with the new term.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No. Nope. I'll put the amendment. All in favour of the motion, sorry. The motion, the original motion. So we're voting on the original motion, please. All in favour of that, please raise your hand. Thank you. And those against? Councillor Graham voted against, all other councillors present voted for. So the motion was carried. That gets us to 18.4, which is the 23-24 Midcoast ARIC annual report. This report presents the 23-24 Midcoast Audit, Risk and Improvement Committee annual report to council. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. I move that the 2023-24 Midcoast ARIC annual report be endorsed.
Thank you. Seconder, please. Thank you, Councillor Howard. Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. The ARIC, which we speak of, is the Midcoast Audit, Risk and Improvement Committee, and this is the annual report of that committee. It has a very robust function, and the conversations, you know, the organisation is put under the microscope with the conversations at ARIC, the Audit, Risk and Improvement Committee. When we say audit, it's not just financial audit. It does audit all the activities of council. It audits IT, it audits WHS, it audits how we might manage volunteers, it audits over a four-year program, pretty much every element of council's activities. I did want to talk a little bit about the strength of ARIC, which comes mostly from its independent members, as well as its councillor members. Councillor Tickle was a member of ARIC during the period of this annual report, as was I. I'll speak to Councillor Tickle's strengths over my own, but the three independent members as well. The chair is Stephen Coates. He is the president of the Institute of Internal Auditors Australia and a member of the International Internal Audit Standards Board. Mm-hmm. He brings international experience. He's regularly working at international conferences and brings a wealth of experience. He's assisted by another independent member, Mark McCoy, who has decades of experience as a non-executive director in banking, software, hospital and aged care sectors. Mark advises boards and CEOs on governance and is a university lecturer on finance, governance and international business. And the third independent member is Shane Hubble, who works with international businesses and local government on corporate governance, enterprise risk and internal audit. He's a certified fellow of the Institute of Internal Auditors and a fellow of the Governance Institute of Australia. They're the three independent members who make up the ARIC, and I've been appointed by council as the non-voting councillor representative. So it is a group with a very, very strong experience and depth of experience that they bring to their role. And I just, the annual report outlines all the activities from the last 12 months of ARIC. It outlines all the internal audit activities that have been happening. It's well worth a bedtime read. And it also outlines the upcoming program of internal audits for ARIC. But a summary from the chair in his remarks in the report: council is embarking on a significant financial sustainability journey, one that ARIC is closely monitoring. The governance framework within council is well supported, and the risk management framework is both robust and effective.
Thank you. Any further speakers? No? I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody? Yes? Motion is carried? Yes? Yep. Next one. Okay, I have to leave too. This is an item that I've got a conflict, so I'm going to vacate the room. I'm noting that Councillor Smith is also leaving the room, and Deputy Mayor Miller is going to take over.
Thank you, Matt. Top tag. Well done.
Thank you, noting that the Mayor is leaving the room, as is Councillor Smith. All right, that brings us to item 18.5, proposed acquisition of land for public road, 323 Blackhead Road, Halliday's Point. Council's capital works program includes the construction of a 2-metre-wide shared path along Blackhead Road between Tallwoods Village and Diamond Beach Road. The project supports Council's delivery of services outlined in the pedestrian access and mobility plan for Halliday's Point. There are sections of Blackhead Road which are narrow, with limited road shoulder within the road reserve to safely accommodate the path and provide suitable separation between path users and motorists. Some property acquisitions are therefore required to accommodate the path in such areas. This report addresses the required land acquisition at 323 Blackhead Road, Halliday's Point. Do I have a mover? Thank you, Councillor Howard.
You're welcome, Deputy Mayor Miller. I move the recommendation as printed in the business paper.
Thank you, Councillor Howard. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Turnbull. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thank you, Deputy Mayor Miller.
Do I have any other speakers?
Point of order.
Point of order.
Thanks, Councillor Tiggle. You do need to address the code of conduct in your point of order. Which section of the code?
I most certainly do. Councillor Howard needs to address the Deputy Mayor as Chair in accordance to the code of meeting conduct.
An excellent point, Councillor Tickle. Thank you.
My apologies.
Councillor Howard notes. Thank you, Councillor Tickle, for bringing that important point of order. Are there any other speakers on this motion? And I think I'll put the motion to the vote. All in favour? Against? I didn't raise my hand, but I was also in favour. That's unanimous. Thank you. And we will invite the Mayor back to the room. Mayor, that motion was passed unanimously.
Thank you, Councillor Miller. So that gets us to 18.6, which is the 24-25 monthly budget variation report, October 2024. This report presents the October 2024 monthly budget review and includes details of proposed budget variations identified during the review. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Turnbull.
I move that the monthly budget variation report covering the October 2024 be noted and the budget variations proposed, including transfers to and from reserves, be approved.
Thank you very much. Seconder, please. Councillor Tickle, does anyone wish to speak to it? Nope. All in favour, please raise your hands. Thank you. And those against? Councillor Graham has voted against. Everybody else voted for. The motion is carried. Moving to item 18.7, which is the cash investments report. Yeah, she'll come when she's ready. Cash Investments Report, October 2024. This report provides details of the funds invested by Midcoast Council under Section 625 of the Local Government Act 1993, as required by Clause 212 of the Local Government General Regulation 2021. Mover, please. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. I move that the report be received and noted.
Thank you very much. Seconder, Councillor Turnbull. Councillor Wilson, did you wish to speak to it? No. No speakers? Thank you. I'll put the motion. All in favour? That is everybody present. Noting that Councillor Smith is still out of the room. Moving to 18.8, financial statements and auditors report for 2023-24. This report presents the financial statements and auditors' reports for the period 1 July 23 to 30 June 24 for Midcoast Council to the public in accordance with Section 419, subsection 1 of the Local Government Act 1993. Mover, please. Councillor Miller.
I move the Council receive and note the audited financial statements for Midcoast Council for the period 1 July 2023 to 30 June 2024.
Thank you. Seconder, Councillor Tickle. Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. And we note that we heard from the Audit Office at the beginning of this meeting. These financial statements, we have seen them before. We've seen the draft. We've seen the final statements. They've been out for public exhibition. But in summary, we have more cash and we have less debt. So cash and investments is now at $372 million, which is $42 million more cash and investments than we had at the same time last year. And we have paid down debt by $6.6 million, which means we have less debt than we had a year ago. There are, you heard the Aubrey from the Audit Office talk about the Office of Local Government financial benchmarks. And it's like when you go to the GP and they check your blood pressure and your heart rate, because from that they can tell a lot. The benchmarks are the same. There's a couple of sort of quick measures that you look at, because from that you can tell a lot. And what these measures show is exactly what we've been talking about consistently about where Council is at. So Council met 5 of the 6 OLG financial benchmarks, and we've done very well on the financial benchmarks. Operating performance ratio, which looks at how well Council contains its expenses within revenue. So are your expenses less than your revenue? So it should be above 0, and Council is at 3.3%. So we've met that benchmark. The own source operating revenue ratio, which measures how much Council relies on external grants for operations. How reliant are we on external grants? The Office of Local Government says that should be above 60%, and it is. We're at 65%. Tick. The unrestricted current ratio, which looks at Council's ability to meet its short-term obligations. Can we pay the bills when they're due?
That should be above 1.5 times. It's at 4.4 times. So it's well above the OLG benchmark. And the debt service cover ratio, which measures operating cash available to make debt repayments. Do you have enough income to meet the mortgage payments? And that should be above 2 times. It's 4 times. So again, we're well above that financial ratio. Now, the one we didn't meet of the OLG financial benchmarks is the rates and annual charges outstanding. And that measures, are people paying their rates on time? And yes, we didn't quite meet that one. It should be less than 10% of rates are outstanding, and it's 10.7% of rates are outstanding. And I think that's a compassionate measure that this council is not chasing down and debt recovering every single rate that's outstanding. I'm comfortable that 10.7% is close enough to the guideline and that we're being compassionate with people who are having difficulty paying the rates. So I'm comfortable with that. So those are all great. What tells the story, though, is the asset performance ratios, which are also put forward by the Office of Local Government. And this tells the story that we've been telling consistently, right? The renewals ratio and the asset maintenance ratios are okay. The issue that's highlighted is the infrastructure backlog ratio, which should be less than 2%, but it's 10%. So it should be less than 2%, but it's way up at 10%. And that's the story that we've always been telling. So all the hard work we've been doing over these last few years, the story we've been consistently been saying, we have cash in the bank, we can meet our bills as they come up, but we need to do more to sort the backlog of the roads and the infrastructure that need to be fixed. That's what those benchmarks clearly show. That's the big issue, and that's what we're working on. But as we heard from the New South Wales Audit Office, which is an external auditor, it is a fine-toothed comb that they go through, and they have found that council has an unqualified audit. There are, for the first time in my memory, no high-risk issues addressed by the auditor. I think there were 2 medium-risk and 3 low-risk. But all of these papers will be published as a report for the New South Wales Government, including ours, and you'll be able to see every other council in New South Wales. And you will see qualified audits. You will, whereas ours was unqualified. You will see plenty of high-risk items identified for other councils. We have no high-risk items identified. So it's what I've constantly been saying for 3 years. It's the story we keep going on about. Council's doing great on the day-to-day. We have more cash than we did a year ago. We have less debt than we had a year ago. We can meet our bills when they become due, but we have to do the work for that long-term infrastructure to put more money into our roads. This just tells that story once again.
Thank you, Councillor. Any further speakers? Councillor Howard.
Question for the director through you, the mayor. Whilst the financial papers were on public exhibition, were there any submissions? And if so, where do those submissions go? They would usually be attached to this report at the end of the exhibition period.
Thanks, Councillor. The exhibition period not quite closed yet. An odd statutory requirement which requires them to stay open for a period of time after the reports are presented to council. So when they close, we will report those back to council at the December meeting. At the moment we have one submission. We'll see what they are at the close and we'll report them back to you in December.
Just to follow up, was that submission a positive or, you know, a critical of us?
The one submission was congratulating us on meeting the benchmarks and getting an unqualified audit. Yep.
Thank you, Director. Any further, Councillor Beasley?
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to thank Councillor Miller for saving me from having to read it. His explanation was excellent, and it would be hoped that he writes the precis for every one of the financial reports that I don't have to read in the future.
I would, however, encourage all councillors to read financial reports. It is a requirement that we do. I note your humour there. All right, thank you. No further speakers. I'll put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. And those against? Councillor Graham's voting against. All other councillors voted for. The motion is carried. That gets us to item 18.9, which is the Mid-Coast Council Annual Report for 23-24. Under the Integrated Planning and Reporting Framework, all councils are required to prepare an annual report within 5 months of the end of the financial year. The annual report is one of the key points of accountability between a council and the community. The annual report provides an overview of the activities and achievements of council in providing services and projects to the community over the last financial year. The purpose of this report is to provide council with a copy of Mid-Coast Council's annual report 23-24 for the period 1 July 30 June 2024, ahead of it being published on Council's website and a copy being provided to the Minister for Local Government in accordance with the legislation. You have a mover, please. Councillor Turnbull.
Slight amendment to
thank
recommendation.
Director.
We picked up an error in the categorisation of the council committee, so we have suggested an amendment to that, which we can bring up on the screen just to correct that.
Yep, thank you. Yeah, we did talk about that earlier. There you go, Councillor Turnbull.
Oh, I thought it was going to be an easy one. I move that the Mid Coast Council annual report 23-24 for the period of 1 July 23 to 30 June 24 be endorsed by Council subject to the following amendments to pages 65 and 66 of the attachment, so that the working group's heading on page 65 be amended to internal committees and working groups, that the Asset Advisory Committee be moved from the external committee heading on page 66 to under the internal committees and working groups heading on page 65, and that Councillor Fowler and Councillor Tickle will be added as representatives for the Asset Advisory Committee.
Thank you very much. Seconder, please. This is a report for last year. This is the annual report for 23-24. He was in fact a member of that committee. Thank you. I need a seconder. Yes, Councillor Miller. Any discussion? Councillor Wilson?
This is actually quite an important report. I know we're required to produce it as part of the Local Government Act. It contains some good bits of information for all sorts of people, but I would like to draw the public's attention to part two, which is the highlights, and also part six, which is the state of the Mid-Coast report, and that looks at the longer-term strategic plan and outcomes and how we're performing. Just two parts of that report, I think they're quite important.
Thank you very much. Any further speakers? No? Put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. Those against? Councillor Graham's voting against. All other councillors voted for. The motion's carried. Moving to item 18.10, which is State of the Mid Coast 2022 to 2024 report. Required under the Integrated Planning Reporting Framework, the State of the Mid Coast 22-24 report provides an update on the progress towards achieving the long-term community vision as described in the Community Strategic Plan. It highlights key achievements under each community outcome area, detailing the progress made toward the social, environmental, economic and civic leadership objectives identified in the CSP over the previous council term. The State of the Mid Coast report highlights both our successes and future challenges and opportunities for the for the Mid Coast local government area. Could I have a mover, please? Thank you. Councillor Howard?
Yes, I'd like to move that the State of the State of the Mid Coast 2022 to 2024 report be noted by Council. Two, that the State of the Mid Coast 2022-2024 report be appended to the 2023-24 annual report.
Thank you. Perhaps we should have considered them around the other way. Too late. Seconder, please, Councillor Turnbull. Thank you. Any speakers? Nope. You didn't want to? No. In that case, I'll put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. That is everybody present. And then we get to 1811. So this is a report on the sale of some properties. The purpose of this report is to recommend that Council sell the following two individual residential blocks. A is 14, Farley Parade, Gloucester. One block, and B is 8 Gloucester Street, Stroud, one block. Mover, please. Thank you. Councillor Tickle.
Thank you, Mayor. Move that Council, one, note the contents of this report and their confidential attachments, two, resolve to approve the marketing and sale of the properties, 3, authorise the General Manager to execute sale and purchase contracts with interested persons on agreed terms with a price of not less than the lower of the indicated sale price of the properties as set out in the confidential attachments 1, 2 and 3.
Thank you. Seconder, please. Councillor Howard. Do you wish to speak to it, Councillor Tickle?
No, thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Howard.
Only to say it's wonderful that we've, as a council, we're finally getting to this point where our asset management is where the rubber's meeting the road, and some of the assets that, you know, perhaps council don't need and we can monetise for the community's benefit can finally be moved on, for want of a better phrase.
This, I'll just add to that, if I may. I think this work is definitely in the very early stages, but we have set up an asset advisory committee which is going systematically through all of our assets. And while it's never a good idea to sell assets, in my view, we have identified a couple which will give us some income that we can then invest in developing some of the other properties. And the idea is that over a number of years, we will be able to snowball that amount that we're investing and getting reasonable returns from some of our properties that have been sitting there for a number of years, not earning any income and potentially costing us money. And in the meantime, may well be able to put some of those to a better community use, or as well, you know, for the benefit of the community as well as for the council coffers. Councillor Miller.
Thank you, Mayor. To echo your statements and Councillor Howard's statements, if you remember right back to the start of this meeting, which seems very long ago, with the notice of motion about roads from Councillor Tickle, and we talked about how it's a piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And we talked about the work that we're doing on financial sustainability, on asset management, on business transformation. And then just a few items ago, we talked about the audit and where council is. There's a coherent story that's been told over 3+ years. And I remember just earlier this week, we had some training for councillors where we had an external person come and talk to us about, you know, what's life like as a councillor. All that start of term stuff. And one of the things he said is be patient. It takes quite some time for things to happen. So we have been patient, but it's great to be here, as Councillor Howard said. So this is part of the financial sustainability strategy, to look at every asset the council owns and how to get the best return for ratepayers out of every single asset. Now, sometimes that might be an asset in an industrial area that we might choose to do something slightly entrepreneurial with. Sometimes it might be a residential block like these two blocks, where it's just put it out for sale, get some cash in for council that can then be used to create more money. So this is about realising those assets and getting the best return possible for ratepayers. It takes the pressure off rates. It creates more income that could be put towards roads. And this is really the starting line of work that we've been doing for a number of years now. As Councillor Howard said, it's very exciting to be here. It's not the last time we'll be talking about assets that we can get more out of. This is just the start of it.
Thank you, Councillor. Any further speakers? No, I'll put the motion. All in favour, please raise your hand. Thank you. That, I think I've got everybody in the room. That's carried. And that's the end of the business papers. So now we move on to matters of urgent business, and I need to ask if any councillors or staff have any matters of urgent business that need to be discussed today. No? In that case, Councillor Turnbull.
I suppose you could put it in here, but I
wanted to... there's a process for this.
Okay, good.
You need to tell us what the issue is and why it has to be discussed today and can't wait to a future meeting.
It's because of the date. So it's not so much an issue, more than an acknowledgement and a recognition. So right now we've already started seeing promotion of International Women's Day. However, International Men's Day often goes unnoticed. So that was actually last Tuesday. And I just wanted to make mention, because we have some incredibly passionate men here on council who are supporting their communities, as well as incredibly talented men on council and working in council on the executive. So I just wanted to acknowledge and celebrate the men and the roles that they play in our lives. And because it's the first council meeting and it was last Tuesday, I didn't want it to go unnoticed.
That's fine. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. All right. That gets us to the end, which is at 4:20. And I declare the meeting closed. Thank you, everybody, for your participation.